Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to day three of the winter meetings here on For All You Kids Out There, a Mets adjacent baseball perspectives podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. Once again, with me is Jarrett Seidler. Jarrett, we actually have Mets transactions to talk today, quite a few.
Yeah. Some stuff happened.
Stuff has happened.
More stuff is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think the winter meetings are like functionally over tonight. Yeah. So I don't know if we're going to do anything. If the Mets do anything, we'll do something tomorrow. If not, we'll be back on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. So, but we will start. I guess there started being a little bit of heat on Quintana, maybe like last night, that the Mets were talking to him. It came together fairly quickly.
Yeah, Mike Mayer mentioned it kind of early this morning, and then it happened, you know, maybe a half hour after that, early Western time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm guessing it probably actually happened yesterday, if that's true. Look, I mean, Quintana is 3 years older than Jameson Taillon and Taiwan Walker, but is essentially the same pitcher?
I would imagine their 23 projections are fairly similar. They're all going to be like in the 160 inning range and the high 3 ERA range.
All right. Those guys got 4 years. Quintana got 2. That's partially due to his age. It's partially due. 2021 was like truly dreadful. And he was hurt, if I recall, in 2020. But if you go back before the pandemic, he was a very reliable mid-rotation starter. And in 2022... he was actually, if anything, a little bit better than that. He was actually probably the best of those three pitchers last year. You know, he does not throw particularly hard. His pitch characteristics are okay.
I mean, this has been, like, true for the entire duration of Jose Quintana's career.
He is, of course, same originally Mets prospect. They released him out of the complex a million years ago. He got brought up, like, 90 million times when he was emerging into stardom with the White Sox back in the day. I mean, I think my position on this for the last little bit's been clear. I don't really know what they were doing getting like exactly a fourth starter.
Right.
But if you're going to get a fourth starter, I would prefer not giving one a lot of term, because then you get stuck in the position where you may be pitching a pitcher who is not one of your five best starters for like a year or two at some point, just because he's getting a large paycheck,
right,
or you are unable to figure out he is not one of your five best starters. I think out of this group of guys, for the contract they have, because again, I could give less of a shit about the money.
Right.
It's not my money. The Mets are playing in the Monopoly money at this point. It does not matter. They're already over the threshold where nothing matters anymore.
Yeah.
So from the perspective of potential future opportunity costs, I think Quintana is less likely to be both healthy and terrible at any point during this contract than Walker is on his, or even Taillon is on his. So good job there. I would also like it if they signed a better pitcher, but they're apparently, you know, I would say the industry buzz is that they're going to sign Senga at some point.
Yeah.
Or at least they're the favorites to sign Senga. And they were very, they leaked everybody on the planet that Quintana did not impact their pursuit of Senga, that was a wholly separate thing. And you kind of fight, you know, they've even leaked to a couple people today that they would sign both Senga and Nimmo, because like we said, they're at the Monopoly money. So, you know, Tony DeColmo's kind of downplayed the Nimmo possibility a lot, and I think it's probably more likely than not that Nimmo's leaving. But the idea of actually building look, David Peterson's optionable. Tyler McGill is optionable. Eliezer Hernandez is optionable. And some of these guys may have to pitch out of the bullpen anyway. So, because they still don't have a major league bullpen at this point. I'll get to that in a minute. So the idea of building, you know, 8, 9, I think Joey Lucchese's optionable too. The idea of building, like, everybody forgets about him. He's still around.
He's still a starting pitcher. Yeah.
He's going to be healthy. You're going to be talking about him a lot in a month or two when Andy Rodriguez starts popping up on everybody's national list.
Including ours.
Including ours, yes. But, yeah, they this is what you want. You want to actually, especially if you're going to build a higher variance, older rotation, you want to have a lot of depth behind it. So, yeah, it would be nice if they also signed Senga. I could also see, especially if they signed Senga, you know, David Peterson is a major league pitcher that has characteristics, that has traits that certain teams cover.
Has a lot of control left, 4 years, yeah.
Yes, has a lot of team control, has certain traits. People think that the Mets are bad at maximizing these traits, so they might want to take a spin with them. They might be right that the Mets are bad at maximizing these traits. You know, Tyler McGill has 5 years of control left.
Yeah.
And flashed some stuff last year, kind of similar. So the idea of using one of those guys as part of a trade to go out and get a really good outfielder also makes sense, but it really only makes sense if you continue to sign starting pitching so you build up that depth that I was talking about a minute ago.
I do wonder with Quintana, this deal is fine. I would rather have him on this deal than Tyone on his or Walker on his. It was a really weird season for him. Like, he suddenly became like a contact suppression guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's any reason for that, per se. I mean, especially on his fastball. He got 200 points of slugging off his fastball between 2021 and 2022. So, without really changing his batted ball profile at all.
What does it look like if you go back to 2018, 2019?
18 and 19 was like, I mean, this would be the lowest exit velocity against of his career, but it's closer to his early days with the White Sox.
I'm driving, as obviously anybody listening can probably tell. Mm. Did he make any substantive changes to his pitch mix at all?
Not really. He threw the fastball a little bit less, but not to the point that I would consider it a pitch mix change, and threw his changeup a little more. And, you know, his changeup has always gotten swings and misses, as has his curveball. So I think that's too the difference between him and, like, Walker and Tyone, is he does have secondaries to get swings and misses more consistently. It has been, you know, he wasn't last year, but has been a, you know, 10K per nine pitcher in the past.
Again, he's also not being paid like a pitcher who is going to repeat throwing.
Right.
How many innings did he throw last year? Was it like 160?
Only 103.
Okay. What was he down with?
I don't remember. It was when he was with the Pirates, I think.
Like that. He's not being paid like a 3 ERA guy. He's also not being paid like 160, 170 inning guy. He's being paid like...
Actually, I take that back. It was 103 for Pittsburgh. It was 165 overall. So.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah. He's not being paid like 160 inning, 3 ERA guy.
Right.
He's being paid as 120 inning, like 4.4 ERA guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which the true talent says he's.
I mean, he literally just looking at ERA and innings pitched about as well as Carlos Rodon last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, thinks that he's gonna be that like that going forward. So yeah,
right.
But I'm just saying.
But you know, the Cardinals are a smart baseball team.
Have a very good deep. Put a very good defense behind him, obviously.
But they traded for him with the intention of starting him in playoff games, yep. Which they did, and he was good in that role. You know, and smarter teams were generally his market. Yep. Again, I don't think that's because of some maximization or the idea that he's a secret number two starter like people thought he was 6 years ago, 7 years ago. But the idea that he was only going to get 2 years, he wasn't going to get an outrageous AAV, he's a lefty outside of, you know, the pandemic years, you might call them, he's had a high degree of reliability.
Right. I mean, outside of his 2021, which was just a bizarre season, you know, he had his highest strikeout rate, but also his highest walk rate by a fair bit. You know, he's broadly been like 170, 180 inning, low fours ERA pitcher, right? Really since he left the White Sox. So I think that's what you're signing up for, probably 160 innings of league average pitching. You might get better than that, but that's like the realistic floor.
If the Mets get 300 innings of league average starting pitching out of him, this contract is a big win.
I mean, it's literally the contract they gave Taiwan Walker in a similar spot, but Walker had had better stuff, but no track record of durability.
This is the discussion that we've been having for the past few days. You want to find the next 2021 Taiwan Walker instead of giving Taiwan Walker $72 million.
Taiwan Walker, for the record, threw 316 innings of 3.98 ERA baseball for the Mets.
Sure. Yeah. Jameson Taillon signed after we recorded last night. Yeah. He signed for less funny than Walker, which, I do not understand why you would sign Walker instead of Taillon in that view. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. But the Phillies are, you know, Phillies have done some interesting stuff. They roll 5-0 a song.
They did.
I was going to get that in. Noah Song, obviously, for longtime listeners or readers, was the Red Sox fourth-round pick in 2019. Would have been probably one of the top 10 or 12 picks in the nation, but he had a naval commitment. So the Red Sox drafted him. He looked like the best pitching prospect out of that draft for 3 months after the draft. Included the Olympic qualifier. It included ISOM and where the hell did I go to see? I ducked out on Saber Seminar that year to go see him. Me and Jeff Ponis ducked out on Saber Seminar to go see him in fucking Lowell, I think. I believe that was stolen. Jeff was going under his previous pen name. Mm-hmm. He would have made the 2021 01, except at the time that we published the list, his status was unclear. He was originally seeking a waiver and ultimately did not get it. It got caught up in just all kinds of weird, like, Naval Defense Department policy. Mm-hmm. He's been an active duty naval flight officer for the last couple of years. There are no indications at present that he wants to resume his professional career, but that can always change, and the Phillies got a free top 50 pitching prospect if it does. Now, the weird part about this is they don't have to pay him. They don't have to put him on the 40. Mm-hmm. But due to an obscure major league rule that's existed since the time when actual major leaguers went off to go fight in wars, he's going to accrue service time for as long as they stash him. So you could hypothetically see the Phillies just stash him on the reserve list, for the military reserve list, for 6 years, and then he declares free agency.
Right.
So this, like, really fucks the Red Sox, because the Red Sox intentionally did not select him to the 40-man roster, because they would have had to start either using options or accruing him service time to get him off the major league roster had they selected him. The Phillies are getting something for free, so they don't give
it $100,000, whatever the Rule 5 price is.
But whatever. And they can always get $50,000 back if they want to offer him back. Yeah. But, that's free in the context of baseball transactions. And they got something for nothing, and the Red Sox lost, frankly, still one of their top pitching prospects and all they got was the Roll 5 price. And I would suspect if there is anybody in the world that can convince Noah Song to come back, it is probably Dave Dombrowski, who in fact drafted him in the Boston Red Sox. But we'll see.
I thought you said that GMs don't get involved in day two of the draft, Jarrett.
Dave Dombrowski is not the GM of the Philadelphia Phillies. Mm-hmm. Simple.
All right, fair enough.
yeah, so the Mets roll five Zach Greene out of the Yankees system. That's the only other pick we'll talk about. I think there's a good chance Zach Greene makes the Mets major league roster. I have, I obviously cover the Yankees system a decent amount. Like, 90 to 94, high spin, kind of moves around, gets a lot of whiffs up in the zone. A little bit of a funky arm action. He's kind of like, he's got like one of those, like, the arm slot doesn't really match the delivery, so like just kind of doesn't look right to the hitter. Good slider, above average slider. This is a very generic relief type profile.
It's the Rule 5 draft.
And the Mets have almost none of. So, I think there's a shot he makes the Mets as a middle reliever. It's certainly worth the $100,000 or the $50,000 if you return him, just to bring him to camp and give him a shot. The Mets are certainly going to have a couple unsettled spots in the bullpen. And, you want to bring in some guys to contribute to compete with, like, Montez de Oca and Orzy and those type of guys in camp, because you don't want to have options there. So it doesn't really hurt if you have open 40-man spots, which the Mets certainly have a bunch of, to try and leverage them, in the same kind of way they did when they claimed Steven Ridings off of waivers. It was kind of the same profile, except throws harder. Perfectly. Here's a guy that had some buzz. I didn't really get into Rule 5 gossip this year because I have better things to do on migraine. But he was a guy I heard, his name I heard, heard him, heard Ryan Noda, heard some of the other guys that were running.
The Dodgers had like three guys picked in the first five actual picks or something.
Yeah, the guy the Mets took from the Red Sox, that Ward, everybody knew was going to get taken. Yeah.
I like Andrew Pelletti, who the Orioles took from the Red Sox in the last couple of years. They made a couple interesting minor league Rule 5 picks, but like Wilkin Ramos, throws hard, has a curveball, is still an A ball.
Yeah.
Not Estuary Ruiz. Augustin Ruiz, who's also in the Padre system, is like vaguely interesting. Has sort of been around the fringes of their prospect list the last few years. Has a shot, certainly. So, Jonathan Arauz has been around. I don't think he's actually played in the majors, but he bounced around the upper minors forever.
Yeah, he was in the Phillies system, and he was in the Red Sox system.
Was he in the Cole Hamels deal? I thought he was a Houston guy.
I don't remember.
I thought originally he was a Houston prospect. I don't remember either, but
he's been around.
I thought he was in one of those Houston Phillies deals from around that era.
We got a really good listener question, which I think is what you were actually leading into, so go ahead.
You mean the email?
Yeah.
We have like three listener questions that I've just not been reading on the last few shows, so I apologize for that. We might catch up this weekend. But sure, I will take this email. I did see that come in today. I'm in the wrong tab. It's from James. Today, Jarrett quote tweeted a noted Mets Twitter provocateur. That's giving him too much credit. He's just kind of a dolt. Well, he's not like trying to be provocative. He just is very dull in the way he thinks about baseball. While discussing GM duties, saying, do people think GMs other than Preller are deeply involved in the weeds of the J2 market or middle rounds of the draft? Later that day, the Mets traded Keyshawn Askew for Brooks Raley. How deep in the weeds of the minor league system are GMs? Was Epler making the assessment that Askew is a player worth trading for Raley, or someone else in the front office making recommendations to the GM about which prospects to trade in a deal like this? We can tell the funny story about the Red Sox wanting Jacob DeGrom for Kelly Shopich, and Alderson considering it before he called one person in Mets pro scouting or player development.
Varies widely.
It does.
GM. So specific to the amateur markets, they tend to be more hands off, except with the highest profile signing. Mm-hmm. That does vary some by GM too. But for the most part, you're not going to see a GM dictating, you know, 6th, 7th round picks. You're not going to see a GM dictating $300,000-$500,000 international signings. Might be involved on a macro level, but not on a micro level. Once you're in the system, you're going to have more of an involvement there. Although, again, a good general manager is going to lean pretty heavily on the guys that are actually more qualified to measure Keyshawn Askew's development. And I'm using this to transition into the trade that the Mets made, which was that they traded Keyshawn Askew, who was a prospect that had some, I don't know, hype is the right word, but you know, I would get questions. I would see questions.
He had a very good season as a college arm in ANA Plus at levels he should dominate given his delivery and fastball characteristics.
The 10th round pick a few years ago.
It's a very nice 10th round pick. Like, he's probably going to pitch in the majors.
He's got kind of a weird sidewinding delivery. His slider, he's got a real good sweepy slider. It has some nice characteristics to it. The whiff rate is nice and high. His fastball, again, characteristics over it. It's like the left-handed version of the kid they took in Rule 5, right? And that's more valuable because left-handed beats right-handed. Look, I know people have a couple of – I said he wasn't going to start on Twitter, and a couple people responded to me, hey, maybe he can start. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a high chance that Keyshawn Askew is going to turn into a, like, mid-rotation starter. I think a realistic evaluation of him is probably a lefty specialist.
He did not start much at Clemson, to be fair.
Didn't start much in Clemson. He really hasn't started much in the minors. He started a little bit.
Can the Rays do weird stuff with him? Like, can they Jeff Springs him? Maybe.
Right. I mean, I'm sure they think they can. They also tend to bolt collect these arms and see who figures it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and look, Brooks Raley is, I mean, let's just get this out of the top. He was one of the Rays relievers who was both unvaccinated and did the weird LGBT protest. So, yeah, I would prefer not to have those guys on the team either, but we are supposed to evaluate this as a baseball move, I suppose. And as a baseball move, they've got 2 years of control and a really, really good left-handed reliever. Really, really good. He is one of the best contact suppressors in the majors. He's pretty good at everything else. He's like a 95th percentile outcome for Keyshawn Askew, who he's actually fairly similar to in delivering pitches. It took him a gazillion years and a trip to the KBO to actually get there, because he was a starting pitching prospect of at least decent renown before he went to the KBO and became a sidewinding lefty specialist. But, you know, as lefty relievers go, he's going to cost a lot less than Andrew Chafin, and I'm not sure he's substantially, if at all, worse.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's 1 year plus an option. He is under the same contractual rules that cause Joely Rodriguez to be a free agent. He does not have team control at the end of this, despite his service time. He will be a free agent at the end of the contract, is my understanding. I would prefer they not trade for guys that are doing protests against Pride Night, as I think I hope everybody listening to this podcast would not. I can't imagine a person that would want to be protesting Pride Night has made it through
380, I think it's 4 or 5, I don't know, 385, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but God bless if you are. Yeah, but that's a small move. This is a nifty move, taking advantage of the Rays being the Rays and being somewhat cheap and overly intrigued by weird pitching profiles. I don't think relatively it's going to kill the Mets in some of the ways that you might. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Keyshawn Askew is the next Chris Sale. Who the hell knows? We were searching pretty hard for prospect 20 on the Mets list.
I mean,
he came up.
He would have been 20 to 30 somewhere, probably. Probably closer to 30.
His name came up. It was, you know,
they handled him weird too in terms of his, like,
Javier Atencio came up more seriously, and both of those guys just went through a 5.
That's about it for that. You want to talk about Aaron Judge then?
I mean, I just got home, so Aaron Judge signed with the Yankees.
After all that, the arson judge has declared the Bronx no longer burning. So there you go.
Yeah, Mets probably should have gotten in on that. They didn't life move on.
Supposedly, he turned down $400 million from the Padres. So the Padres do keep overbidding.
So as it came out today, the Padres never made a formal offer.
Yes,
never
see,
got
yes,
to
yeah.
that stage with them.
Totally
the only other team
offer you $400 million. Yeah.
Yeah, the Yankees were Giants and Yankees were the only teams that made formal offers, and the last formal offers ended up being identical. He met with the Padres. There was no offer. Take that for whatever it's worth.
All right, Jared has made it home, and we have made it home to probably the end of the winter meeting. So unless they sign Kodai Senga or some other weird stuff happens. But we'll see you soon on another edition. But for all you kids out there,